Okay. Welcome to everybody for the 21st Shia in the series of Shiurim Asor Klolim Lahagra. We are now on Daf Kuf Mem Vav on line 375. Now, up till now, we've been dealing with rather abstract issues of philosophy and theology. We've discussed very mildly, or perhaps very flittingly, some of the implications, but not in any very specific or in specific ways. However, today we're actually going to see a very, very important fundamental consequence of just about everything that we've learned up till now, and in particular, we're going to actually see, in fact, many of the sources in the Gaon for what is usually understood to be the theology, the philosophy, which is expounded in Reb Chaim Volozhiner's Nefesh HaChayim. Now, let's just read into the Gaon. Once again, we're on Daf Kuf Mem Vav, line 375. Says the Gaon, as if to say that right now we have to sort of hammer out, take stock of what we digested intellectually, and try to reflect upon the existential implications. Uvahavincha kol hanal, aniskala'el. If you understand everything that's mentioned above, tovin, you will understand, ech tolei hakol b'maisim b'nei adam, how everything in the world is contingent upon the acts of man. Shekulam oylem v'yodim imoy aydei maisav. Everything goes either up and down in accordance with his actions. Of course, we basically said that man through his actions and through his study of the Torah, right, creates the Ratzon of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. What more can we want from man's ontological status? Man is literally the creator, the definer of the teleology of the physical and spiritual worlds. That's what we established in the Gaon. What are the implications? The implications of this is that we have to understand the central status which man occupies in the world. Because man's shoresh is, of course, above everything. Why is the shoresh above everything? For the simple reason, for what we've learned over the last several months. Since man, through his thoughts and through his intellectual apprehensions, creates and constructs the ratzon, the will, with which HaKadosh Baruch Hu creates the world, he defines the will of HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the world, and acts upon that ethically, then man defines the wherewithal of the teleology of all of physical and metaphysical existence. Hence, right, to do this, man's sheresh is l'mayla b'kula. Man's sheresh is, in fact, actually above everything else, because man, by defining the will of God, and of course God's will is the Gaon introduced in the first klal, represents the first revelation of the Tzimtzum. The Tzimtzum is the Ratzon of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The Ratzon of HaKadosh Baruch Hu is delineated and intellectually defined by the mind and thoughts and intellect of man. Therefore, because of this, man's sheresh, his root, his ability to affect the world, l'mayla mikulam, is in fact prior to the world, is pre-existence. His sheresh, his root, lies within the Ratzon, the will of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. God's will is man's will. The Hainum Malachim, it's even higher than the Malachim, the angels. Ki Malachim Him Koiches Mebuya Oilam, because the Malachim are powers which are created in the world. Ushluka Bayla says Lebuya Oilam Kafi, actually this Chasse that's missing here, it was the Malachim basically are messengers which God sends to the world. However, who directs the messages? God. Who directs God? Man. V'kulam tluyim v'oindim atchias ha'odim rotzayn koine. When man does the will of God, then in fact, actually, man, as we've seen already, ontologically defines the will of God. God, therefore, right, sends angels to do his will. So therefore, in a certain sense, man is the being, right, who empowers the entirety of creation, and empowers even the malachim, who represent the highest level of the spiritual metaphysical cosmos. When man does the ratzon of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he arouses the ratzon of God Himself. Because God's ratzon is to do good, right? To do good for the world, to embed the world. So therefore, man, right, in fact, actually adds to the shores of the neshama. When the shores of man's neshama swells, right, with, in fact, that which man produces through doing the ratzon of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, as b'mitzara yisrael gam surface term lamata. So this basically inundates the world with God's goodness and God's grace. When this goodness of HaKadosh Baruch Hu filters below, saturates the world below, by they call b'chinas haburim. This comes to every aspect of the creation. Not only does it fill up every aspect of the spiritual creation or the spiritual world, it fills them up with the divine light, but also fills up the physical bria as well. So therefore, in fact, actually, the toiv, in fact, finds its journey from HaKadosh Baruch Hu and arrives kesoilus noki. In other words, this toiv actually reaches man. Man, in a certain sense, generates his own toiv. This toiv, because when it reaches man, reaches it like soilus, like flour, which has been filtered and sifted. And then man can partake of this flour, which is not littered by any type of external substances. Okay, now, if we really think about this, the Goyin is in fact elucidating the first shah of the Nefesh HaChayim. I think it's worth to go into this because the Reb Chaim Volozhiner's Sefer, the Nefesh HaChayim, is in fact the Lithuanian Manifesto, which is in fact accepted as the standard theology of the yeshivas. Nevertheless, the yeshivas tend to learn, and only to learn, Shal Dalet. So, in fact, actually, the yeshivas do two damages to Nefesh HaChayim. First of all, they only learn Shal Dalet, the fourth gate, in contradistinction to the other gates. Shal gates 1, 2, and 3. And number two, the yeshivas usually do not learn Shal Dalet in any methodological, systematic philosophical manner, but rather learn it as a type of a Musa Sefer, an inspiration. I find that most yeshivas actually learn it in the days between Pesach and Shavuos, when a person is preparing for Matan Torah. The fact is that the Shal Dal of Shachaim is, in fact, exhilarating and, in fact, spiritually uplifting. But the fact is that I think it's usually blurred, right? The connection between the other gates in Nefesh HaChayim, Shah Aleph, Beis, and Gimel, right? In Shah Gimel, we've spoken about that. We've contrasted the Chaim Volozhiner's notion of the Tzimtzum with the Goyim's notion of the Tzimtzum. We haven't spoken about Shah Beis except for one or two shiurim ago when we spoke about the world as a living animal. I would prefer not to speak about that. The practical existential philosophy of Chaim Volozhiner, which has left its mark upon Lithuanian anthropology, is Shah Aleph. You'll notice that Lithuanian Torah institutions declare one goal. There's one thing that's important, and that is to become a Gadol Batera. I remember that one yeshiva used to advertise by quoting the Beis Shmuel and Ebenezer that every father is required to raise his son to become a Gadol Batera. Lithuanian yeshivas recognize and, in fact, admire one and only one thing, Godless Batera. That's Lithuanian yeshivas. Insofar, in fact, this admiration which is becoming our generation, almost a worship of godless patera, in fact, reaches its extremity. If you look in the if a letter that was written by Rav Dessler, it appears early at the end of the third or the second chelik of the Michtam Eliyahu, and there he contrasts the derech of the yeshivas to the what he calls the derech of Frankfurt. He says Frankfurt, that means the Yekesha system, educational system, is not really concerned with producing gedolei Torah, Torah giants and scholarship, but rather, you know, religious Jews, believing Jews who go about their lives, right, working out a living, and doing mitzvahs, and fearing and loving God. Everybody comes out happy, comes out from, because basically people are doing what they want to do in the world. However, in the yeshivas, right, there's a single-minded pursuit of godless patera. The yeshiva system produces many dropouts. The yeshiva system produces people who become from, apikosim, minim, heretics, maskilim. But it's all worth it. It's all worth it because the yeshivas produce the godless patera. And in fact, actually, I'm usually fond of saying is that that's what Rav Dessler learns in the Gemara in Brachos L'Hemet Beis. A lot tried to do, like Rav Shimon Yochai, and were matzliach. It means that's the system. The system is that only one person is matzliach, everybody else is a failure. In any case, where does this system come from? This system is not just devised by a bunch of diabolical Rosh Yeshivas, but rather the system is in fact rooted in Shah Aleph of Nefesh HaChayim. The Nefesh HaChayim begins the Sefer with defining what is called Tzelem Elokim. You will recall that the Rambam in the Megillah Nevuchim, I'm not sure where you recall this from, maybe I spoke about this in my Shiur in the Megillah Nevuchim, that the Rambam defines Tzelem Elokim as referring to man's intellect. However, Nefesh HaChayim defines it basically is a Kadosh Baruch Hu who created man, right, giving him tremendous metaphysical powers, in which man's impression upon the spiritual worlds is parallel to that of God's. And that's what Chaim Volozhiner writes in Perek Beis of Shara Aleph, Daf Beis in this edition of Nefesh HaChayim, which I've been using over the last few years. He says in the third paragraph, Amal Hu Yisbach Shemayim, Beis Briyas Oilam Mozgulam, when Kadosh Baruch Hu created all the worlds, Boam, right, he created them, Yesh B'ayin, okay? And what he did was, right, after this, after he created them, and the Kadosh Baruch Hu was called Elokim, Baruch Hu Kula. Therefore, what did Kadosh Baruch Hu do, after having created all these incredible worlds, and being the source of the powers for all these metaphysical and spiritual, physical worlds? So in the beginning of Parak Gimel, the Chaim Volozhiner says, in a similar way, in material day, Bo Yisbach is Adam, because Bo created man. He gave him power over tens of thousands of worlds and powers. That is, a misbar, either infinite or highly finite. And he placed them in man's disposal. The man is in control of them. Through every details of his actions, the dibur of his speech, or machshavos voices in his thoughts. Kol sidri hanhagosav. Right? Every nuance, action, speech, or thought of man, hein l'tov or l'hefach, whether it is for good or for bad. And that's what he says, Kibbe Maizav Adibur Machshavos HaTovim, through man's proper actions, speeches, speech, and thoughts, Umekayim V'Nosin Koyach, Bekama Koyachas V'Elomis L'Yon Makadoshim, he gives powers to many supernal worlds, Umekayim V'Nosin Kedusha V'Or, right? He invests them with holiness, sanctity, and light, divine light. And on the contrary, right? And that's what he says. And that's what it's called, written, Vayivah Elokim, as Adam, B'Tzalma, B'Tzalma Elokim. Shekamoshi is Baal Shabbat, this is a Kodesh Baruch Hu, who Elohim? He is Elohim, meaning Bala Koiches, he's the source of powers in all the worlds. So therefore he created man in an equal way. And that's really what the Goyin is saying over here. When you think about it, you can think about the prowess, the spiritual prowess of man. Kodesh Baruch Hu created man in such a way, and that he has this tremendous spiritual prowess. And the fact is that the Goyin goes on and says that man is greater than the Malachim. Okay? Interestingly enough is, so Chaim V'Lajana also speaks about this. And Chaim V'Lajana goes on and says, later on in the Nefesh HaChayim, he compares man with the Malachim, saying the following thing. It says, is that man, let me find exactly where he says this. One second. He says in Perak Yod, Daf Lamed Gimel, "Pizeh Yevoya Pesha Dover." In other words, he says there's a machloikus dispute between the Yishayim. Who is greater, man or a malach? So he says certainly a malach is bigger than man in a sense in what he actually is. In other words, a malach, in other words, occupies a certain spiritual position, right? And man is only physical. However, it says that Omnam Medaber Echad Yisrael Gadol Adam Yamalachim. But however, man is greater than a malach. How is man greater than a malach? In other words, a malach is only in charge of one force. However, man is in charge of all the forces. And in particular, man in charge of forces that go beyond the malach. A malach can never go higher than his allotted spiritual place. And then in Perek Yud Aleph, right, the Nefesh HaChaim goes on and says that only when Klal Yisrael sanctifies God in the terrestrial world, then only then can the Malachim look to sanctify God in the spiritual world. Really, the Nefesh HaChayim is actually following this paragraph in the Goyin. That in fact, man has incredible powers which surpass that of the Malach. And in fact, what's the reason that this is true? So Rabbi Chaim V'Lajna understands the reason this is true is that man's Shailish is in fact higher than any aspect of the world. He speaks about here in Man Shailish is that man is the nefesh of the entire world. He speaks about it in Perek Vav, Perek Zayin. In other words, Man Shailish is higher than any of the worlds. We'll see actually ultimately the Man Shailish is actually in the level with Chaim V'Lajna claims, Yisroel V'Yerayetz K'Shabricha Chadu. In other words, since man Shailish, as Chaim V'Lajna, is higher than that of any of the worlds, so therefore, because of this, man, in fact, actually, is Shailish than all the worlds, even the Malachim, right, have to do his bidding, or can only act spiritually after man takes the first act. So, in the bottom line, which what I want to describe is, that in fact, in this, these lines, from line 375 until 384, right, these lines serve as a source of the entire Shah Aleph, the first gate of Chaim V'Lajna's Nefesh HaChayim. Here we see the Lithuanian anthropology, the Litvische conception of man. Man is at the very center of the universe. Man, in fact, is the source of all powers with which man is able to affect the physical and spiritual cosmos. That's who man is. He's higher than the Malachim. What happened is that Chaim V'Lajna created a world, and actually the Goyin created a world, which is actually homeocentric. Man is the center of the world. So in contradistinction to the Copernican revolution, where in fact man no longer loses his job at the center of the world, Chaim V'Lajna and the Goyin restore man to the center of the world. Now, I've remarked in previous shiurim that a lot of the ideas of the Goyim are, in a certain sense, related, analogous to the ideas of Kant. It is often said about Kant, I think Kant, in fact, actually says himself, that what he did was he basically reversed the Copernican revolution. Copernicus, as you recall, displaced man from the center of the world. Man occupies a planet which circles around the sun. And Kant restored man to the center of the world by saying that basically man organizes the world in terms of his intellect. Basically, what Reb Chaim Volozhiner and Lev Shechaim did is they in fact restored man to the center of the universe. Man is not just one koyach, one power among the myriad metaphysical powers of the world, but in fact, actually, man becomes the very center of the universe. This is something which is a direct consequence of everything we've spoken about in the Shiurim, but is explicitly expressed in these lines, in Klal Yud, line 375 to 384, and we see this constitutes the anthropology and concept of man as we see in Reb Chaim Volozhiner's Nefesh HaChayim. Okay, now, let me go on a little bit further, because I think it's worth it to actually continue with these ideas, because these ideas actually continue in the next several paragraphs. We're now on line 385, the last line on Daf Kuf Mem Vav. V'imlo haya Adam v'Rishon chayter. If Adam v'Rishon had not sinned, lo haya mistach ha'Adam l'troich ba'molo b'breiras ha'toiv. Man would not have to work hard in producing good. In other words, we know that man works in order to delineate, define, and to act in accordance with that which is toiv, that which is good. Now, so therefore, where does the chayt of Adam HaRishon enter in? Man would not have to work. Man would not have to involve himself in such hard work in being bevare in sifting the good from the bad. Why? Vayim is barim elav. The good would in fact actually be separated out by itself. There would be a process that would, a natural process in which the good would in fact stand out from the bad. Man would have to work hard in order to separate these things. Now what would this happen? Because the lack of good, right, is not due to man, but rather comes from the fact of creation. Because Baruch Hu created a world in which good would be bounded to allow man to have free will. So there's a mixture of good and not good, or lack of good. When man sinned, he caused two things, two bad things to happen. Aleph, number one, Shemas Aleph Gam Zuhum V'Rabba Toiv. He mixes evil with good. V'Abeis, and the second thing that man caused, man set into motion, Sharabba Ayyoda, the evil comes from man. Umach Bazet Toyach Rav Lizbara. Because of that, man has to work very hard in separating and sorting out the good from the evil. V'Gamu Ba'atzbe Tzorach L'Toyach Lavar, he tells us to do this, Mashi'ira Ba'atzbe, that which he caused himself. Because man's actions always turn to him and he has to repay for his actions. What is the Goyim saying here? He's saying something very, very interesting. I want to speak and go back to the Rambam in the Maran Avuchim. Very, very important. It's very, very interesting is that I've mentioned to you many times, especially in the very beginning Shiurim, that the Goyim in the Chaim Volozhiner represents a certain type of a Gilgul of the Maran Avuchim. In other words, the non-immanence, the emphasis on intellect, which the Rambam, through his rationalist philosophy, bequeathed to Judaism, which is overturned by a line of thinkers after the Arizal, this was restored to its central place, chiefly by the Lithuanian philosophers, the Goyim and the Nefesh HaChayim, albeit, right, alpi the Kabbalah, alpi their own interpretation of the Arizal. Now, if you recall, so very, very interestingly enough is that actually, if you look at Nefesh HaChayim, there are many parallels between it and the Maran Avuchim, not only in terms of ideas, but also structurally too. Now, In the Rambam Neber Nevuchim, the Rambam begins by defining what is called Tzelem Elokim. And there the Rambam says that Tzelem Elokim refers to man's intellect. The word doesn't, Chas v'Shalom, God forbid, it doesn't refer to the fact that man has any anthropological, corporeal likeness to God, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Chas v'Shalom, is devoid of any corporeality. But rather, Tzelem Elokim refers to, in fact, man's intellect. Man's intellect works, in a certain sense, in a analogous form to the way God's intellect works. That's in chapter 68-69, at the end of, in the first chelik of the Maariv Nevuchim. And that's the Rambam's position of what's called Tzelem Elokim. Now, in the second chapter, the Rambam, in the Maariv Nevuchim, right, poses a question that was asked to him by a certain man of learning. And this question has to do with what's called the Eitz Hadas, Tovara. We know that man sinned by eating from the Eitz Hadas. And because he sinned from Eitz Hadas, right, man, in fact, acquired das. So the question posed to the Rambam, which is probably, it was actually posed to the Rambam by another person, or might be the Rambam has fictitiously created a person posing this question, is that if you say that man was initially created to imitate God through his intellect, why should it be that after he sins, he acquires das? Das is not a punishment for sinning. Das is actually what man should possess a priori, the chachilah, should be a reward, not a punishment. So the Rambam there goes on, after he terribly insults the person, and goes on to say that in fact, that the das that we're speaking about is not theoretical knowledge, but rather we're speaking about ethical knowledge, practical knowledge. Knowledge either of aesthetic things or of ethical things. So in other words, that's in fact actually what the Rambam says. Now, comes the Gaon, and in fact actually, in a certain sense, is mimicking the Maariv Nevuchim. The Gaon says, look, Kadosh Baruch Hu created man in such a way that man would be master over the entire world. And that's probably what we define, but the Gaon doesn't say this, and that's called Tzelem Elokim. The man is master over all the forces of the world. Now, the fact is that what happens with the Chet Adam HaRishon? At the Chet Adam HaRishon, we know that, in fact, man's actions, I mean, we know from the Chumash, that in fact, actually, man has to work harder. Man's actions become significant, really, at the end of the Chet Adam HaRishon. In other words, how can you see, let's put it this way. In other words, in a certain sense, right? In other words, if man is empowered at the point of his creation, this is the purpose of existence, how do you explain the Chet Adam HaRishon? Is man dispowered from things? In which case, if he's stripped of his power, so everything we're saying is not true. In what way can I understand what we're saying here in terms of the state of man before, after Chet Adam HaRishon? Because after all, man's status changes drastically in some way before, pre, and post-Chet. So, comes the Gaon and says the following thing. Almost as if the Gaon is, we have to interpret what the Gaon is saying. The Gaon says that before the Chet, there was no evil. There was either good or less good. Good is bounded. Good is finite. That the Rambam speaks about. The Rambam is no concept of evil. Things are either good or less than perfect. And this is the point of the Tzimtzum. What was the point of the Tzimtzum? To give bechira to man, to give free will to God. However, right, it would seem that even though, so the Rambam says, I mean the Gaon says, that had man not sinned, man would not have to work hard to select the good. The good would be selected by itself. That doesn't mean the good would be selected by itself. Okay? So, it's very interesting. Is man playing a role, or is he not playing a role? Now, you can't say man is not playing a role, because the Gaon says in line 388, Sha'ala came b'tzoyne, God thought to create the world, he wanted to give free will to man. Right? So, you have to say the following. You have to say is that, in other words, man, right? In other words, man's bechira is still important before the Chet Adam HaRishon. However, man's bechira is different because he's not choosing evil good from evil. But it seems to be that man is choosing good, in other words, from lack of good. Or what you would say, ha'eda b'zeh ha'toyv. In other words, where there's a lack of good, so in fact, actually, this lack of good gave man's bechira, and man basically, you could say, magnifies the good. Man just produces good. There's a lack of good. Not evil. Good is limited. Man, through his bechira, empowers good, makes good greater and greater. So basically, all man does is he jacks up the good. He doesn't have a power to create ra. There is no ra. So in other words, God is limited. Man's purpose in the world, we understand the good, through his bechira, is basically to magnify the good, to bring the good back to its perfect state, in which case, man reflects upon the Ratzon of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. However, when man sins, we have good and evil. And not only that, the evil is produced by man. So, it's not enough, man doesn't just magnify the good. Man is to separate the good from the evil. In which case, man, not only is he capable of magnifying the good, he's also capable of magnifying the evil. So in other words, because this is what Nefesh HaChaim says. He says in the Shah Aleph that man has the ability either to create, in Parag Gimel, he says this, or to destroy. In other words, man becomes capable of destruction. In order that man should avoid his capability of destruction, man, in fact, actually has to reflect and carefully select between what he would deem to be good and what he deemed to be evil. So, it seems to me is that what the Goyin is explaining in the Chet of the Barishim is that before the Chet, of course, man has bechira, man has free will. The Goyin does not say, Kashal, man doesn't have free will. Because if man doesn't have free will, then what's the purpose of creation? The Goyin's entire ontology basically falls apart. But rather, man's free will is merely to increase the magnitude of good through his free will. He can decide to be passive or to be active. However, after the chait of Adam HaRishon, then man's job is not only to increase the magnitude of good, but he has to select good from evil. In so doing, the man has to work hard to make sure that which he's aggrandizing, that which he's empowering, is good and not evil. And that's what the Goyin is saying. The basic thing here, what the Goyin is accomplishing is, don't think that man's role has changed significantly, right, in his power to affect the world, except that he affects the world differently. Before the chait, man just empowers the good. He can decide to empower or not to empower the good. After the chait, man can either empower the good or empower evil. And because of this, man's selection of good and his empowerment of good, as a result of that, requires a tremendous amount more effort. So man basically has to work on it. Okay, now, goes on the going and says the following thing. Pay, and on line 394, V'tovin kozeh, if you understand all this, and you should understand all this as the going, Shetomet came v'voy ha'rotzen li'oilam da'ayna la'koyches ma'ayla obruy mata kodim shenizgala za'atoyv nika b'chinas ibor v'shamu abira. In other words, this toy, before it filters down to the world, when it's first created by man in order to empower the world, this is called ibor. This is called the state of where the fetus is in the mother, awaiting its revelation, awaiting its expression in the world. Okay, now, of course, where would we be in Lithuanian philosophy without Torah? Torah is central, as we've seen throughout all the Kolam of the Goyim, because man's ethical action can only come after man's knowledge of that which is ethically proper to do, that which is ethically right, ethically wrong. A good part of man's bilur, his selection between good and evil, comes from his understanding of the Torah. So, says the Goyim, in line 397, we're on Daf Kuf Mem Zayin, line 397, V'chein ba Torah, similarly in the Torah, at the time that HaKadosh Baruch Hu spoke to Moshe Rabbeinu, Hayah kol v'giloi ratzoino yizbar. Everything, God's ratzoin was intellectually apprehended by man. Ki higidloi b'chol pilotim pratav v'tiktoker. God's Ratzon was revealed to man, at least revealed to Moshe Rabbeinu, with all the details and all the nuances. After that, it went away. Very interesting is that the Goyin understands that what happened to Matan Torah, in a certain sense, I would say, is perhaps parallel to that that happened as a result of the Chet of the Marisha. That appears to be the innuendo here, even though, really, when you think about it, there, you know, one could certainly differentiate. But let's go on further. After that, this revelation of all these details basically disengaged itself, as we've learned several times in this klalim. What was left was the impression, the neshimah, the internal logical structure, right? Inherent within the Torah itself. That's the title of our journal. Look at our website for details. You can get your edition. And that's Chazal. Recover the Protim Diktukim by logical exegesis of Scripture from either a Vav Yisera, an extra Vav, or Shah Oisias, an extra letter. In other words, not only should a person learn Gemara, he should learn Chumash. In the written law itself, had the Kudim Vatamim, the actual punctuation, the vowels, the Kudim of the vowels, and the Tamim are the musical incantations, right? That's the syntax, Shein Lahavin Prushim. To understand the meaning of the Torah Shabbat, as Pshuta Shomikra, and you see the Goyim understands that Pshuta Shomikra is also a part of the Torah Shabbat Peh, which man has to work hard to recover. Nistalku, they were disengaged. L'sh'arak ha'koitzin v'atagim, only the little crowns and points on the letters, Shem Mechines HaReshima, the Goyim has discussed this early in the Klolim. In other words, this is a disengagement. Now, how can man understand the Torah? We've spoken about this, but the Goyim is going back over this. How is it possible for man to recover the truth of the Torah, which is now left, and only somehow left its impression? Because man's Shoresh Neshama is such that he can connect with the ultimate divine wisdom. Uma'ira, a person comes. Uma'ira, Sheresh Nishmasai. What man does, he invokes the Sheresh of the Shama, which is higher than any other world. She is noted to a Leha Olais, Ritzainai, that it should illuminate the Ratzon of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And through doing this, man is able to connect intellectually with the Torah. And also comes through the powers and creations of the world, which are connected with his neshama. They were created for him, and know they should be revealed through him. But nice them. Now it's very interesting. What does it mean? What is this terrestrial world that somehow this illumination is not only illuminating the Sheresh of man's neshama, which allows him to understand the Torah, but what is it coming, right? That the terrestrial world, which are connected with the neshama, should be revealed to him. What's that talking about? And they give permission to each other to be revealed. What is this? What is these terrestrial forces that connect with man's neshama, which in a certain sense are also being revealed to man? Well, if we go back to the early Klolim, my dear listener, you recall that the Goyin understood that the universe is a sefer, both through God's words and God's actions. And the Goyim understood that Har Sinai, not only were the secrets of the Torah revealed, but that the secrets of the universe, the scientific secrets of the universe were revealed. The Goyim elaborates on that in Klal Beis. The first two Dibleis, Adoich Lielacha, the physical world revealed itself to man that he might know, that he would discover that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created them, and that there's one God. And also too, the Dibur of HaKadosh Baruch Hu is revealed to man, through which you can understand the ethics of the world. Ontology and ethics, you remember that 20 Shi'urim ago, 19 Shi'urim ago, we spoke about that in detail. The Goyim understands here that not only does man's Sheresh Neshama, which illuminates man's intellect, not only does it illuminate man's intellect in his understanding, his intellectual apprehension of the Torah, but it illuminates man's intellect in his scientific understanding of the natural world. The Goyim cannot get away from the fact that man's intellectual purpose is not only Limud HaTorah, but the discovery of the underlying natural law through which God reveals himself as the creator. And this is what the Goyim is saying. Uma'ira shorish nishmasa, she's neitzoy leh, ha'oretz yatzoni yizbarach, man shorish nishama, is located in two places. It's located in the Torah, which allows man to actually apprehend its details. And then also too, it is rooted, is man's place in the world, which allows him to apprehend the creation. And these creations, these koichas, uvaydi koichas, buhay ha'olam, creation of the world, that are dovek, it is neshama. What do you mean dovek and neshama? How is the creation dovek and man's neshama? Says the Goyim, it's an interesting thing, shenivru b'shvilai. The world was created for man. In other words, not only did God create a Torah, which his will was to reveal it to man, God created a scientific world for man. Man is given dominion. Man is given dominion. Miluas ha'aretz v'kivshua. Adam the first is given dominion to conquer the world. And this he can only do because he apprehends the underlying natural law of the world. This can only come because the world was created for man. It's an interesting theory in physics, a principle in physics, called the anthropic principle. It's discussed about in the physics books. Many physicists are somehow puzzled by the fact that the concepts of physics are such that these constants can give rise to life. Now, I'm not going to speak about the pros and cons of the Ap principle, but the fact that there are great physicists that have actually subscribed to this, including my professor at Princeton, Wheeler, John Wheeler, who actually wrote an introduction to a book written by two physicists, which is called The Anthropic Principle. The fact is that physics understands, too, that in a certain sense, the physics of the world, the forces of nature, the underlying rational structure of natural reality, is calibrated in order to serve man. The Goyim is calling this the Sheresh of man's neshama. Man's neshama has his Sheresh not only in the Torah, which he learns, but also in the universe, which he studies. And this is and the reason man's these forces and parts of nature are rooted in man's neshama, because they were created for him. The world, the universe, is user-friendly to man, since God created the world for man. Therefore, man is able to understand and intellectually apprehend and study the natural order. Goes on The Goyim, on line 405. You see, very interesting, you see how important, how significant understanding the world, understanding science was important for the Goyim. The Gadal quotes the Goyim, and Sulam Eliyahu is saying that the Goyim says that whoever is missing Chachma of the world is missing 10 hands. Esa Yada Shaltena. This is the Gadal quoting the Goyim. We see how fundamental scientific knowledge was in the Goyim. The Goyim rediscovers God, that rediscovers God, creates God, not only through Limud HaTorah, but also through his scientific study of the world. V'neisim zeh lazeh, goes on the Goyim, on line 405, V'neisim lazeh, they give one to the other, rishus, permission, legalis, to reveal, adboy elei amamish, right? U'metchila neisim lazeh rishus tekabel noch shamayim, v'retzoni yisborach, v'yachachach neisim rishus legalis. Very interesting, that all the parts of the world, first, accept upon themselves, the yoke of heaven, and then after that, they give Rishus to reveal. Very interesting. What does he mean by this? Kol zeh misnayit tamid. All this happens perennially. V'havin heitev, you should understand very, very well. What is the Goyim saying? V'noistim Rishus ala zeh. In other words, we say this in the morning, in the vichas, the brachas of Kriyat Shema. But this is not only speaking about the celestial beings, the Srafe, by Fani HaKodesh, and Yishayahu's vision is purely in the metaphysical, the spiritual worlds. The Goyim, though, in a certain sense, is referring not only to the spiritual worlds, but really to the physical worlds too. What does it mean to say that give Rishus to be revealed? First, the Makabal Oymach L'Shamayim, that's what the Goyim says. And then after that, he says, V'chavach noistim reshus legalois. After they give man reshus to reveal them, to be revealed, or that he should reveal them. And the Goyim, what does this mean? So, like I said before, it's very hard to understand this in the physical sense. In other words, certainly, in the spiritual sense, we can understand the Seraphim, give Rishus Zelazer. What is the notion in the physical sense? I want to claim the following thing. What do we mean in the tefillahs when we say, what does this mean? I want to claim the following thing. When two things give reshus to each other, that means that they decide to act in harmony. In other words, what we're saying that tefillahs is that all the spiritual worlds, the spiritual creatures, Seraphim, Efani HaKodesh, the Malachim, are all acting in harmony. That's what Yeshayahu's vision was. In other words, Oise Shalom b'mreimav, Hu yasa shayim aleinu. Kosh Baruch Hu first makes peace, just like Kosh Baruch Hu makes peace in the higher worlds, all the higher worlds act in harmony, he should make peace among us. Think about among the Jews, but between the Jews and the nations. Okay, the Jews are always at war, nations are always at war, but the fact is that what the Goyim is saying is that man, what man perceives in the physical world is a harmony. In other words, how does man come to understand the natural law? Man comes to understand the natural law only because the world exudes harmony. The state of harmony is what Chazal are referring to when they say that each of these creations give Rishus Zeh Lazeh. Says the Goyim, just like we perceive harmony in the spiritual worlds, concerning which we say in the liturgy that the spiritual creatures give reshus zeh lazeh, they give permission to each person to praise God, to sanctify Him, so too, in the physical world, all of the elements of the physical world, the atoms, the fundamental particles, and the quarks, and the strings, and the RNA, and the DNA, and the ribosomes, and the proteins, why do they work in harmony? Because each of them gives reshus zeh lazeh. Once they kiviyachol give permission to each one to do its thing, and therefore, by so doing, act in harmony, then, and only then, do they allow themselves to be revealed to man. Man cannot comprehend a universe which is chaotic. Man can only comprehend a universe which acts in harmony. This harmony comes from the mutual sharing of power and force among the constituents of nature. That's what the Garden is saying. An incredible idea. An incredible idea. As if all of nature comes and is alive to allocate power and labor and purpose in order to produce harmony, and only then can man make himself intelligible to the intellect of man, who from this harmony constructs or discovers, depending upon what your view of science is, the underlying rational reality of the natural world. That is here the interesting idea of the Gaon. Now, to go actually further into this would actually be much more difficult, and you might actually accuse me of, you know, stepping over the mystical edge, which I refuse to do. The Gaon concludes and says, "V'havin heitev," you should understand this, says the Gaon. Maybe there's certain things that you can only understand and not think. Not express. Ve'zesoid, and this is the soid, this is the deep meaning of the pasuk in Hosea, Perk Beis, Chav Gimel to Chav Dalet, V'hoya b'yaymahu, on that day, Ane, I will answer Num Hashem, Ane es Hashemayim, I will answer the Shemayim, V'hem Yanu, and they will answer es Ha'oretz, V'hem Yanu as Yisrael. In other words, the different parts of the nature are going to answer each other. In other words, the Pasuk here in Hosea is specific by that each part of nature answers every part of nature. And this is the Noisim Mishum Zeh Lazeh. Okay. Baruch Hashem, we've actually managed in this hour to have actually described man's role in the world. Alpi the Gaon, in accordance with the, in the eyes of the Gaon. And we see very, very, easily enough is, how the Gaon allows to man a central role in the world. Now, the fact is that man's central role in the world is not only emphasized or expressed within man's performance of mitzvahs, as the Nefesh HaChayim delineates very, in great detail in Shah Aleph, but also regarding Libud HaTorah too, in Shah Dalet. And we've spoken about this previously. The Gaon basing himself upon a famous Gemara, for example, in Gittin, the Fofa Bebeis, how man lives the Torah and comes back from Pete's Torah after. I don't want to go into this again, because once again, this is the same ideas, which in fact actually are clearly, clearly here too. The main thing, which I think we have to get at, is a very interesting thing. And I think this last point here in the Kuruv is, I think, very, very important too. Is that the Gaon is giving us an understanding of not only what is the importance of the acts of man, but every act of man. And where we include the acts of man, not only are man's ethical acts important, his mitzvahs, as Chai Veloshin has said, his actions, his speech, and his thoughts, not only is man's Limud HaTorah important, through Limud HaTorah, man recovers the details and the nuances, right, which revealed at Sinai, but also, too, man's scientific understanding of the world. What the Goyim here is definitely placing, as he's done previously, but here he, in fact, you know what, does it once again, and he actually, in other words, man's prowess, his intellectual prowess, and not only understanding God's dibur, God's law, his moral law, but also the world. And in fact, through understanding God's world, this can only be done once the world itself is mekabel, is gives reshus. Mekabel shamayim means the world comes to harmony. We see over here is that man's knowledge of the world is not in fact only a purely intellectual thing, but in fact actually is something in which the entire creation takes upon itself ol malchus shamayim. Emes yira shamayim comes only when a person is privy to the understanding of the works of nature. A person who ignores science is in fact rejecting an important part of the yoke of heaven, which is inherent in God's creation. So that's really the important message which the Goyim is including in his concept of man. And this is something that's worth coming to account. The Goyim not only made this up, you can't accuse the Goyim of being a maskil, he learned it in the Pasuk. It's the Araisa. Okay, we're going to finish now the 21st lecture. I am Yitzhak Shem, in a few days I'm going to Russia. I will be in Moscow for 5-6 days. I'm going to Mitashem, be at the wedding of Dan Schatzman, who was very instrumental in creating the series in the first place. I want to wish Dan Mazel Tov. We will Mitashem be dancing with you at some Chabad hall. I will not bring my sword club into the Chabad hall. But I was planning on actually giving a broadcast from the Klois of the Goyim in Vilna, but my cousin David Kamenetsky informs me that the only thing to do there is to daven by the Goyim's kever, but which I will not say Torah, even though it's the Torah of the Goyim. But in any case, Mit Hashem, I will come, just I'm going to come back, B'ezras Hashem, I hope to continue, and I hope actually to actually finish this entire series before Pesach. And until then, I want everybody to have a good Shabbos and be well.